I'm Christina Orlova, your host on the OCD Whisperer podcast, your trusted companion in the battle against OCD. If you're like me and understand the struggles of living with OCD, then you're in the right place. But before we dive into today's episode, I want to tell you about something incredible. Get your OCD survival kit today at www.onlineocdacademy.com. It's filled with amazing resources to aid you in all things OCD, whether you're on a tight budget or just looking to supercharge your progress. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to OCD Whisperer Podcast. Today with me, I have Bianca Simmons. She is an OCD specialist, co-founder of ERP Kaleidoscope, and owner of Bianca Simmons LLC, a mental health private practice that supports individuals living with OCD, other anxiety-related disorders like phobias, BFRBs, panic disorder, and trauma in Texas. Before transitioning into private practice, Bianca gained several years of experience working with individuals diagnosed with severe OCD as the residential manager and outpatient therapist at a residential OCD facility in Houston. Bianca's main goal has always been to provide mental health education, access, and resources to individuals from underrepresented communities and minority populations so everyone can have access to good quality mental health assistance they need and deserve. Also today with me, I have Erin Nee. She's a licensed clinical social worker, psychotherapist, and co-founder of ERP Kaleidoscope, a network membership association that provides support and awareness to BIPOC individuals living with OCD, as well as therapists interested in treating OCD and related disorders. With over 15 years of experience, Erin is also the owner and clinical director of OCD Set Free, where she trains therapists along the East Coast in ethical treatment of OCD and offers compassionate care to those living with OCD across multiple states. Through her advocacy for greater OCD awareness, Erin is overall deeply committed to inclusivity within the OCD community. As a member of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Action Council through the International OCD Foundation, as a faculty member for the Foundation's Behavioral Therapy Training Institute, and through initiatives like ERP Kaleidoscope. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited to be here.
Absolutely. Yes. Both of you here at the same time too. And can I tell you, I love the name ERP Kaleidoscope.
Ooh, tell us, what do you love about it?
Well, I kind of wanted to start with that. That was kind of one of my questions is like, how did you come up with that name in the first place?
Oh my goodness. What a labor of love. Bianca, do you want to take that?
Sure. Yeah. I was going to say, I got really excited when I heard you say that because we put a lot of thought and time and effort into that name. But essentially, it speaks to the mission of what ERP Kaleidoscope is all about, you know, uplifting the voices of BIPOC clinicians who specialize in OCD, as well as the individuals, BIPOC individuals that suffer with OCD. And all that looks very different as communities do. And we want to celebrate that. And we very much think that the kaleidoscope is a pretty good metaphor, a representation of that celebration with not only the colors, but also its purpose. It's meditative in its function, and it can also be fun. Another aspect that we want to bring to this whole process, we want to again, just uplift and celebrate and kind of also go to the mission of your podcast and help these individuals in this community feel less alone.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, when I think of kaleidoscope, right? Like I think of all the fun, cool colors and all the different shapes and sizes. And I got one years ago that like when I first saw it started turning, I couldn't help it. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't. And it's just like wild, but gorgeous. Like a little orgasmic to your eyeballs, but you know, just that name and then ERP with it. I'm like, what a cool mm-hmm. name. Like, huh? Right.
Exactly.
I think it also speaks to the beauty of those living with OCD and then the beauty of the treatment providers, because we are all so different. But oftentimes when people think about OCD, they think about the suffering. And it's really hard to see the beauty. And so we really wanted to highlight how ERP brings out that beauty.
Oh my God, how cool. This is awesome. I love that. I love hearing how people come up with names, right? Because, yeah. Okay. Well, okay. So before we even got onto this today, we all could finally be listening now. We talked a little bit about one of the topics we want to cover today, which is this concept of justice-oriented OCD treatment. And I know folks maybe on the show have heard, you know, Dr. Pinciotti's work, But I know what we talked about is we kind of want to hit a different angle of this and really more talk about what can this actually look like for, I believe, clinicians who might be trying to kind of incorporate this in their practice and work with ERP. So can you tell us a little bit more about like what would that look like? What are some things you're seeing in terms of, you know, when you're doing it yourself or when you're training clinicians?
Yeah, and really, you know, what this justice-oriented ERP approach is really all about in the context of the clinician is how can larger institutions or private practices, community mental health centers, support the clinicians who are doing this work and support BIPOC clinicians. We have been following Caitlin Pinciotti's work and the rest of her team, and it is amazing. And we're so, so grateful for her call to action paper and just, you know, all of the research that she is putting out there about justice-oriented ERP. But really, we're looking at, okay, what happens when that clinician is in the door and or they're in their clinic, they're in their private practice, and someone makes the recommendation that, you know, we can approach topics around race or sexuality in a way that is harmful. Like, what does that clinician do in that moment? How do they stay safe? And how can they maybe educate the other clinicians or advocate for themselves or support their directors in seeing that there are other approaches? And so that's really what ERP Kaleidoscope is focused on, is creating that safe space, creating that voice, and, you know, doing that on the, you know, the lived experience side for BIPOC individuals with OCD, but also taking into consideration that BIPOC clinicians have to be able to feel safe, because that's the only way that they can not only do good work with BIPOC individuals living with OCD, but all individuals that have OCD, because BIPOC clinicians are not just supporting BIPOC individuals. And so really, that's what we are trying to center our work around.
Wonderful. I think one of the questions I think I have too for this, to be honest, is so when I hear that or anybody hears that, like, I'd love to hear a little bit more of like a concrete example, like what would that actually look like in practice, right? Like, what can somebody expect? What would they see?
Right. And so I think that that is a part of what they would see in terms of like supporting the clinicians, the BIPOC clinicians, and what that would look like. Yeah. And so I think that one of the ways that we want to do that is help these clinicians be these advocates in these facilities and in their workplaces, and kind of help them feel safe to have these conversations, A, and then B, how to kind of translate that into what a conversation could look like in the workplace, or what they could feel comfortable saying, or who they could turn to for support to have some of these conversations. So the message is continuing to be spread forward, and so that everyone, again, because so, once if our clinicians are being supported here, then our clients are going to be benefiting from that as well, because that is going to help them be receiving most effective treatment possible. And that is, I think, all any of us want as clinicians.
And I think, Christina, what you're also asking is like, what are some concrete examples that maybe a, you know, clinical director or, you know,
No.
I just wanted to elaborate, you know, because I wanted to make sure we were, you know, covering all the bases. But essentially, I can give you a really great example, a real life example. And I was a little bit hesitant about bringing up this example. Bianca and I went back and forth about this. But, you know, I have encountered situations where there have been recommendations for BIPOC clinicians to serve as the confederates or the actors that come into exposure sessions for non-clinicians of color. And the recommendation has been made to use your, you know, BIPOC clinician and have your client call this particular clinician whatever racial slur comes up, you know, that the client is afraid of saying. And that is, it's very harmful for the client, obviously. It's not really needed. It's not ethical practice. It's super, super harmful for the clinician. And then it's also harmful to the greater marginalized community. And so I think that that's a more concrete example is like, okay, how do we begin to educate those that are maybe teaching clinicians how to do ERP, but how to do it in the most ethical way and the most justice-oriented way, where we don't have to make suggestions that end up harming the clinician or harming the greater community.
Yeah, no, thank you both. I think it's really good to hear the full spectrum of kind of the conceptualizing this, right, as a clinician, because I think this is a really important conversation, to be honest, because, you know, real talk is that we have had training where it's kind of like, oh yeah, like, you know, somebody's having intrusions around, I don't know, let's say homelessness, right? And what if I say something, you know, racial or racially inappropriate, or, oh my gosh, what if I lose control and I act in some sexual aggressive way? Like all that kind of stuff, where people who understand OCD, like, we know that's not your obviously intention, but mm-hmm. to your point, right? Like both of you, what you're saying is, but wait a second, we haven't actually, I think, always slowed down to look again and recognize, well, wait a minute. Like, but in those communities, I mean, we're also, you know, like there's people, like we're human. Right. And so like, yeah, wait a second, slow down and pay attention to that. And yeah, I don't think I've heard that quite yet in terms of having a clinician that might be a person of color being used as part of the exposure, but
it happened.
I certainly yeah. would not feel good. And you know, that was happening. So, I mean, I think that's a really important conversation.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, and, you know, just to your listeners that are maybe those with lived experience, they may be wondering like, oh, like, how do I reach out to this BIPOC clinician?
I was just thinking that too. That's so funny that you said that.
Do you want to take it? Yeah, go for it. Like,
or that was good, just going to be, I think, one of my personal examples, I think, in working with so many clients, not in the beginning, but in the later stages, once that rapport is built and we're feeling more comfortable and that therapeutic relationship is strong, they will share with me that they might have a little bit of race-based OCD, but they were afraid to bring it up before because they, A, they didn't want to hurt me that way and felt like that was the only way to go through with that, or that they just weren't even sure how to go about that and so didn't want to bring that up. And so we were able to have those conversations. And so I think even just considering it from that perspective is important as well, and how to respond to those clients and what mm-hmm. to say to help other clinicians be able to know how to respond to those clients and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And really just looking at like how we, you know, are all focused on approaching a client's concerns from a values-based perspective, right? So using Socratic questioning to kind of look at that core fear instead of hitting the surface level stuff, doing things that could potentially be harmful, really looking at, okay, what's underneath these fears and how can we approach this in a values-driven manner? Because Bianca and I both also utilize acceptance and commitment therapy in conjunction with exposure and response prevention.
Mm-hmm. I love that, because I can also imagine anybody listening now, right? I think the obvious next question is, oh my gosh, like, what would you do then? Like, let's say in that situation, right? Because it is a sensitive topic, just like, you know, any things, there's certain like taboo and other things that are just more sensitive than not, right? So like, what would be a way you'd work with a clinician to support a client, right? Because you want the mm-hmm. client to obviously feel comfortable enough to address the OCD, but you also want to make sure you're holding, you know, mm-hmm. that respectful space, right? So, and I think, as a clinician myself, I know what I'm hearing, but I'd love to hear kind of how would you guide, you know, a therapist to mm-hmm. get at like that deeper element, and then what might an exposure look like if, let's say, it is a race-based OCD?
Yeah. So I think the first piece is that empowerment and understanding that as a clinician, you don't have to experience harm in order to effectively support your clients or your patients. And so really just like 100% reinforcing a lot of what we've already shared around, okay, like what happens when your spidey senses, you know, are coming up and you sense that like a supervisor or someone else is saying, hey, like, can you be the exposure prop? Right. And so then the clinician becomes tokenized and in a very discriminatory way and hurtful way. And so I think that empowerment and advocacy piece is number one. Number two, in terms of how they would approach it, right? Like, what are some tangible exposures? It can be some of the call to action stuff that Dr. Pinciotti already discussed. I want to actually just take a quick step back, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I think the conversation for some clients, it actually starts at that first intake phone call, like over the phone, you know, as most therapists will give a first, you know, free 10 to 15 minutes to check in with a client to kind of see if it's a good fit. And I think that's where the safety begins, because I've actually had clients reach out to me and they're terrified to do work with me because they don't know if they can even stand being in the same room with me because they're so afraid that, like Bianca said, that they're going to hurt me. And so really just starting to normalize, like, it's okay to talk about it. Let's even just talk about your fears. I feel like that's an exposure some clients. And even talking about what is it like, another more tangible one is like, what is it like to be having this conversation with a Black woman? I'm African-American for your listeners, right? And so what is it like to be having this conversation and knowing that you've been having these intrusive thoughts and you've selected a clinician of color to support you in this work? That would be a huge exposure for clients as well. So those are a couple of tangible things.
Mm-hmm. And I think to kind of take a step back in terms of talking about the clinician, I think kind of going back to what you said, and just if there is ever a training or an education moment, just preparing the clinician that something like this could happen or might happen, because they're, like you mentioned, like a lot of people have never heard of situations like that before. And so I think that even just knowing that this could be a potential kind of takes the initial like blow or shock factor out of it, so that you can utilize any skills that you feel like you have learned to navigate those situations.
And you know this, Christina, like taboo OCD, like many clinicians that are not in this world, they don't even know that there's such a thing as bestiality OCD and incest OCD and these really taboo topics. And some clinicians of color have no idea that there is this theme that also latches on to race. And so that can be very blindsiding. And so I think that's what Bianca is essentially speaking about.
Absolutely. I mean, exactly right, right? This topic is nuanced because we are bringing, first of all, understanding what OCD is, which, as we all know, there's still such a big misunderstanding about this disorder and how it works. And then you get into all the different kind of topics and ways that it can latch onto things, including things like race, like, you know, these really taboo, scary topics. And a lot of them, of course, have people really profoundly questioning their own character and morality. And, oh my God, am I then this horrible person? And I can't stand it. And, you know, we know OCD is ego dystonic. And so it is not the same thing as if somebody truly has the intention, the desire, and wants to cause harm versus when you're having intrusions. And I think part of what I'm hearing from both of you also is, you know, when you understand this dynamic and this component and you're aware, the other element, like in general with ERP too, is recognizing that, like you said, and I love that I've certainly been doing more of that, you know, over the years, is let's go deeper. What's really underneath this? What's actually driving it, right? Because it really isn't just, sometimes it can be just, you know, maybe a hot word or something, but really underneath it, if you drill down, right, there's a bigger fear that's underneath a lot of these different themes, right? Usually it's this deeper core feared sense of self. That, you know, I'm potentially this deviant, or I'm negligent, or I'm this horrid individual. Because of me, something horrible is going to happen, or whatever else. But it's usually this really deep, profound sense of self that's kind of broken in many ways, where people with OCD over-identify and kind of start to think, I am OCD. And it's like, well, wait a minute, you don't say I'm diabetic, right? Like, I have OCD. I'm like, that's not my entire identity, right? So teaching people to remember that. And part of that, that's what I'm hearing you say here. It's like, hey, it's not just this initial intrusion here. It's what's that bigger thing underneath that's driving, and let's do some work around that, right? Because we live in a world where there's so many different things that are happening all the time that we have to all navigate, right?
I mean, and the research supports that anyway. The research supports that unless you hit the core fear, it's not going to be effective anyway. And that's so right. I think what we're all talking about is in line with what the research discusses around ERP. So
exactly right. Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess I wonder if this is a good segue into, you know, I know we've also talked a little bit about intersectionality between clinicians and clients within the context of ERP treatment. So would you mind speaking a little bit to that and kind of what you mean by that?
I think that that is what I thought you were asking earlier, which is why I stumbled over my words. So in terms of just how we can help people address it, how it's showing up now, I think having this conversation, I think you have done a fantastic job of just being able to bring it to light and make it easier to have this conversation in terms of clinicians feeling like they have a safe place to turn. And I think that that's what we're trying to do at ERP Kaleidoscope as well, building those safe spaces in terms of healing circles and really just allowing that time for clinicians to be able to heal so that they can go out and do the good work and not feel like they have to, again, just be only focused on the client. Know that they have to focus on themselves too if they're going to get those good outcomes, I think is going to be one of the most important places to start. Because, I mean, we're all clinicians. How can we all not say that we're probably not the best at taking care of ourselves in those times when it matters? I know I definitely can, for sure.
Yeah. And in terms of other things regarding that intersectionality, the intersectionality in the context of ERP treatment, it really is looking at the various identities that we all have, the clinicians and the clients, and how that impacts the work that the client is going to do or able to do. So for my Latino client that comes in and he says, you know, I'm actually getting a little emotional. And he says, you know, he over time shares that he's been doing a ton of compulsions because he doesn't want to reinforce the stereotypes about his own identity. That is, you know, it's something, one, so sacred to work with a client around, and it's really tough work, and it needs to be handled with care. And clinicians of color, right? I'm not a Latina woman. I'm not a Latinx woman, right? Like, so this is not just for non-clinicians of color. This is for all clinicians. Right. We need to be able to support this Latinx man with cultural humility and cultural sensitivity, again, where we're not asking this person to do exposures based off of the stereotypes that we think are relevant to Latinx people, right? And so that is also what we mean by look, you know, it's really important to look at this intersectionality.
Absolutely. I mean, we're really talking about education, right? Like continuing to get much, much better at expanding our own understanding of what it means when you're living within a country, a place where there's so many different cultures and colors and contexts and languages. There's, you know, like a lot of that. So how do you then slow down so you can actually recognize, like, what do you know? What do you not know? Right? Where is it we bring our own biases to things, mm-hmm. or people are bringing their own bias, right? Or where we're maybe misunderstanding, mm-hmm. or maybe we might get something on point, but mm-hmm. right, like you said, slow down a bit so that you can actually really look at what is going on in the room, right? Where you feel like, okay, I seem to get this. Where is it that I have some shortcomings and I actually need to get a little training? Or was it that, you know, I myself as a clinician perhaps have been hurt and I need to address that, right? So I can also, you know, kind of soothe myself a little bit so I can show up better for right. the people I'm serving. It is mm-hmm. all of it, right? All of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And ultimately it impacts. I just think it's so worth it for clinical directors and executive directors of, you know, these various institutions, hospitals to have this conversation because it also impacts their bottom line, right? It impacts the quality of care and it impacts who returns. And so there's a lot at stake on all sides.
Well, yeah. And then we get into also just talking about even just access, right? Access of treatment and who and where and how. And also, I think the other topic too is talking about in general, like cultures and communities of where like some of the stuff isn't even discussed or known. And then how can you bring it to those places more so? Mm-hmm. Right. Because there's definitely, I know in a lot of cultures, you know, a lot of stigma, a lot of shame, a lot of, we don't talk about this stuff or so then you could sit there and continue to not even know that, that this is what you're dealing with. Right. And then we, of course, you know, there's a lot of other things that can happen as a result of that. You might be then turning to, I don't know, drugs or alcohol as a way to try to soothe, or sometimes it could lead all the way up to self-harm or suicide. I mean, right, there's a lot of really big consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and so we will keep, you know, sharing our message and just aiming to support these communities and really just do as much good work as we can.
Absolutely. Right. I really, really appreciate your time today and just having this conversation. And I know that anybody listening, if they would like to find you, reach out to you, how can they find you?
So we have all our individual Instagram handles. And so mine is Therapy with Bianca and Erin's is OCD Set Free. And then we also have our ERP Kaleidoscope handle on IG as well. And currently that is what we are using for contact until we continue rolling out next steps.
Amazing. Thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us, Christina. This was awesome.
Yeah. Amazing.
Thanks for joining us on the OCD Whisperer podcast. Remember, your path to freedom from OCD, it's a journey. Visit www.onlineocdacademy.com for self-help masterclasses that fit your journey, your pace, and your budget. We understand that not everybody can afford a specialist, and that's why we're here to provide accessible resources. Subscribe, rate, and share. And together, we can overcome the challenges of OCD. Stay strong, and we'll catch you on the next episode.